yes, we've had some fun with the Nether Backwash players. Amateur dramatics, you know. It's for people who like dressing up and pretending they're somebody else. And when you think about people like Harry Evans, it's not a bad idea. It was Harry Evans who nearly did for Charlie Bates when they put on Devonshire Cream. You see, Harry had got it worked out that if we started prompt, we could all get in half an hour before closing time and it wouldn't be such a waste of an evening. But on the second night, there was a fog and young Adolphus, who was playing Love's Young Dream because he'd gone sweet on the girl from the sausage factory who was playing the farmer's daughter, got lost on his milk round and we started half an hour late. Halfway through, Harry Evans could see it was going to be touch and go for the dog and bullet, so he started to speed up and leave bits out. Later on, he left whole chunks out and Charlie, who was playing an old farmer called Billy Blee, come to think of it, they're all old farmers in Devonshire Cream, had to hide in a trunk to overhear something that seemed, at the time, to be important to the plot of the whole thing. Well, Harry went rattling on, missing old pages, racing against time, you could say, and completely missed a bit of dialogue that got Charlie out of the trunk, and Charlie, getting all hot and bothered, was stuck in the trunk until the end of the scene. When they got him out, he was like a stranded whale. And it was nearly curtains for old Lady Woods when Sir Hugh played Othello. He came in late and went to bed without cleaning his makeup off. You see, he hadn't told her that Othello was a black man. When she switched on the light to look for her indigestion tablet, she played Hamlet. Rita, the wife, you know, well, it doesn't matter if you don't, she doesn't hold with acting. She says, if people want to pretend to be somebody else, they can't think much of themselves. Rita's sister Gladys had a nasty experience with a one-eyed knife thrower that marked her for life. I suppose she was unlucky in a way. If he'd had two eyes, he wouldn't have given her a second look blindfold. And every year we have the pantomime. We start rehearsing in November and usually get it on in the second week of April. The kids round our way think that Christmas is Easter. Of course, it's Shakespeare that people want to see. With Shakespeare, there's always plenty of blood and dripping. There's plays by Shakespeare where you don't turn round for fear of getting a dagger in the back. Old Shakespeare knew what people wanted. Black treachery, blue murder and buckets of blood. When he thought things were going a bit quiet, he'd have somebody's eyes poked out just to keep the audience from dropping off. The only thing that's come up to Shakespeare is Sweeney Todd. And I don't suppose barber's chairs have been invented then, otherwise old Shakespeare would have been onto it. All that throat-cutting and pies made out of human remains stands to reason it was bound to be popular. After all, it's human nature. Everybody has their favourite part in Shakespeare. Charlie Bates fell in love with himself as Bottom in A Midsummer Night's Dream. There was a report in the local paper that said, in A Midsummer Night's Dream, Charlie Bates was the Bottom, and it sort of went to his head. Arnold let him do it in The Merchant of Venice, but when he came on with his donkey's head in Macbeth, Arnold said that it didn't seem to fit. Charlie was a bit upset as he'd just got the donkey's ears to light up and his bow tie to whiz round, and to be fair to Charlie, anything he does doesn't seem to fit. But not that it matters as long as everyone has a good time. Arnold's wife, Clara, she's always pushing herself forward. She'll try anything from Queen Victoria to Sadie Thompson, and Arnold seems powerless to stop her. That's what comes of marrying a wealthy widow. I told him what it would be like, but there you are. He was tired of working and fed up with being on the sick. He'd signed all his rights away in the registry office, and now he hasn't got a leg to stand on. I mean, Clara as Juliet. They had to shore up the balcony, and young Adolphus had to have the kiss of life after she'd clasped him to her bosom. When I told Rita I was going to be working on the lights, she said, you know what happened last time. It wasn't wired up properly, I said. And how was I to know the cat had had kittens in the fuse box? I don't mean that, she said. I mean when you switched all the traffic lights off and brought darkness in the church when the vicar was telling about the flood. That was an accident, I said. In any case, it's the ghost train. Everybody knows it like the back of their hand. Well, I checked everything over, but some of the equipment in the village hall came out of the ark. The stage lights came on by a switch in the ladies, and the gents played Colonel Bogey every time anyone went in. There was a bit of a flashback stage, but as nobody screamed, I didn't take much notice until the Chinaman turned up, just as everybody was leaving, and demanded to see the chap who was working the lights. He ran a Chinese restaurant. In these places, they work the menus out in numbers. Rita says it's more like going to bingo than eating a meal, but As they don't speak the language, I suppose it makes things easier for them. "My name is Hilo," he said. "Well, hello, Hilo," I said. "Canton restaurant and takeaway," he said. The only time I took away from a Chinese restaurant, I wanted to bring it back. Rita brought hers up. "At 7:30, 14 come in for 42, he said. "Pardon," I said. "At 7:30, 14 come in for 42. "I thought that's what you said," I said. "At 7:20, he said, "Puff, Chinese New Year," I said. "No," he said, "Puff. No lights, no cook, no 42. 14 go off and do not come back." "Really," I said, "this is interesting. Do you have to throw a dice or something?" 14 at 3:50 is 49, he said. "What?" I said. "Noodles or prawn balls with chrysanthemums. Pound note coins," he said. "Now, let's start again," I said. "There must be a code or something." "I can take away the VAT," he said, "but it's still £45. £45 of what?" I said. "Rice. Is it wet or dry? Sweet and sour," he said. "Now, wait a minute," I said. "It can't be both. Why don't we take away the number we first thought of and toss up for the tip?" "Not take away," he said. "Sit down." "I am sitting down," I said. I called Arnold over. His father had been in the army in India and he'd picked up a bit of the lingo, along with some other things. "Look," I said, "Arnold, you can talk a bit of chop suey. See what he wants. I think he wants to tell me something." "He says you blew his lights," Arnold said. "I knew it wasn't proper meat," I said. "Stopped him serving," Arnold said. "He's lost £49. "Well," I said, "I can't stop now, but I'll come round in the morning and help him look for it." I don't really know how it came about, but the next thing I knew was that it had been decided to put on Peter Pan. I think it was because we had some costumes left over from the Desert Song and a job lot of black eye patches that the nuns wore in The Sound of Music. Anyway, the news soon got round and Arnold came into the Dog and Pullet looking white. "She wants to play Peter Pan," he said. "Who does?" I said. "She does," he said. I said, "Oh, she wouldn't fancy Captain Hook," I said. "No," he said, "she'd look silly doing Captain Hook." "I know what you're thinking," he said, "so don't say it." "We could take a vote," I said. "We could," he said, "but it wouldn't make any difference. If I'm in charge, I'll have to do what she tells me." "But Peter Pan," I said, "there's fairies in it, aren't there? And he flies through the air, doesn't he? That's the big thing about Peter Pan, isn't it? The flying, I mean." "I know," he said, "we'd better have a short." So we had a couple of shorts and Charlie came in, hopping on one leg, hoping he'd get picked for Captain Hook. Arnold said, "We'll have to get a safety net," and Charlie said there was an old retired African explorer nearby who might have an elephant trap. The idea of Clara in an elephant trap cheered Arnold up a bit, and Charlie shouted, "Avast, ye landlubbers," and knocked a whole row of glasses and bottles flying when he fell over, holding one leg behind his back, and the landlord stopped serving. It was at this point that Arnold had a brainwave. He doesn't have one very often, so it's best to stand clear when he does. "We'll have to get a survey," he said. "Some of those beams in the ceiling are like old dartboards, full of holes from the beetle." Well, that seemed to settle it. We couldn't expect Clara to risk life and limb if she weren't covered by insurance. The only flaw in Arnold's brainwave was that he hadn't got any money in the kitty to pay for a survey. We just had the fishing trip, and filling the luggage compartment for a 52-seater coach with bottled beer runs away with it. As a matter of fact, we hadn't paid for the hire of the coach yet, or for the damages. But Arnold wasn't going to be put off. "It doesn't have to be a proper survey," he said. "We just need somebody with a decent suit, just to walk around and make a few notes. And nobody, especially Clara, would be any the wiser." And Charlie said he'd drill a few holes in the wooden leg he'd borrowed for Captain Hook just to make it look good. Now, it turned out very handy that the girl who worked in the sausage factory had a brother called Albert who worked on funerals. Well, not full-time. Funerals is what you might call casual. One week you'll be rushed off your feet and the next you'll be hanging around waiting for customers. No, his regular job was as a traveller for health foods. But when he was dressed up for the funeral job, he looked like a destitute diplomat. As Arnold said, he needed witnesses. So we arranged for the full committee to turn up on a Saturday morning when Albert would act out doing a survey. Frankly, I didn't see the need to bring Clara along as well, but Arnold said he wasn't taking any chances. Albert walked around tapping the walls of the village hall, making notes and going tut, tut, as though somebody had passed away. Clara kept saying, what about the drains, and sniffing. But Albert kept on about the roof, as we told him to. I wouldn't put any strain on those beams, he said. They're rotten. I don't know how this place has stood up all these years. If the building inspector came round, he'd have this place stripped down to its foundations. Is it serious? Arnold said. Serious, said Albert. There's only one word for this place, condemned. We were thinking of doing Peter Pan, I said. We'd have to have ropes for the flying. You'll be flying, all right, said Albert, with wings and all. He overdid it, did Albert, and that was what put Clara's back up. He hasn't been up there, she said. How can he tell from here what the beams are like? He's got a trained eye, said Arnold. He can see at a wink what's wrong. By this time, Albert was beginning to look worried. I mean, he was only doing it as a favour. He didn't expect complications. He ought to get up in the roof, Clara said, and down under the floorboards. You can't expect him to do that, I said. He's got his best suit on. But in the end, we had to get a ladder just to satisfy her. Albert tied some paper round his knees, but he'd only got up about three rungs when he started swaying about. I can't stand heights, he said. I always get dizzy. So we all lolled onto the bottom of the ladder, and Albert crawled up to the beam as though he was being forced into the lion's den. Is it all right up there? Arnold shouted. I don't know, said Albert, sounding faint. I've got my eyes closed. After that, matters took a turn for the worse. Albert held on to the beam as though it was the last post and refused to let go. Don't look down, Arnold shouted. It makes it seem worse. And Albert seemed paralysed with fright. And then Charlie gave the game away completely. We could tie a rope on the beam, he said, and then he'd have something to hang on to on his way down. Well, of course, that played right into Clara's hands. I thought you said it wouldn't stand a rope, she said. Well, I said, that's what we're here to find out. I feel sick, Albert said. You and your play-acting. And Clara, quick as a ferret and twice as vicious, saw through the whole plan. He's not a proper surveyor, she said. They're trained to go up chimney stacks. Stop it, said Albert. I think I'm going to faint. In the end, Charlie had to go up with a rope and tie it round the beam. Tell you what, Charlie said when he got up there, this beam is rotten. I don't think it'll stand the two of us. Don't leave me, said Albert. I've gone all swimmy. It was at this point that Albert got caught up in the grip of panic and kicked the ladder away. There was a nasty cracking sound above, and Charlie, who'd been in the Sea Scouts when he was a boy, slid down the rope, leaving Albert lying across the beam and moaning. Now perhaps you'll be satisfied, Arnold said to Clara. He's probably got a splinter now. Well, if Albert hadn't lost his grip and fallen off, he'd be up there now. We moved the vaulting horse to break his fall, but ever since he's been walking around as though he's riding a three-legged pony, which makes it jolly awkward when he's helping out with the coffins. But the worst thing of all was later that night when Charlie and me were walking home, we saw Arnold hanging around outside his house as though he was frightened to go in. It seemed that Clara had locked him out, and Charlie, who can be really cruel when the mood takes him, called out, "What's the matter? Waiting for Tinkerbell?"